What's up? This is Movies On Up. Hopefully you guys had a happy Thanksgiving. I know my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella, and I did. I don't know you had a happy Thanksgiving, but I assume you did, right?
Gobble, gobble.
I guess that means Dave had a happy Thanksgiving. At least one of the holidays is complete. The saga is complete. That is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, I know what movie that comes from because I looked it up and because it happens to be one of my favorites of all time. Let us know what it is, what your guess is. You can do that in any of the following ways, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your answer directly at Dave at moviesonup on the Twitter, or you can leave it on our Facebook page, which can be found facebook.com/moviesonup. If you get it correctly and if we pick you, we will send you some sort of a prize package, which will not be delivered by reindeer or magical men.
Or Amazon drones.
No, definitely not. It may not even be delivered at all because we're kind of bad about that. But once again, our tagline is the saga is complete. Kind of apropos to what we're going to be talking about today, our favorite revenge movies. We've had Old Boy come out last week.
Out of the Furnace comes out this week.
Ah, yes, Out of the Furnace, which Batman gets pissed off because Casey Affleck gets...
Because Batman's brother gets messed with.
Exactly. Obviously, Old Boy, very much a revenge-driven movie, and it seems like Out of the Furnace is as well. So we thought we would tip our cap to people trying to get back at other people for doing bad things to them by doing some good things to you, and that is giving you our top five revenge flicks of all time. And just kind of doing my list. In typical Movies On Up fashion, some of the more obvious ones probably left out.
I left out Old Boy.
I did too.
My number one I've talked about a good bit. Number two might be kind of obvious, but I left it on there anyway. But then I have quite a few also-rans that we can talk about later.
I'm glad you have also-rans because I just got lazy. I mean, I guess I could do an also-ran list of movies that I threw out because I was like, no, it's too obvious to put any Quentin Tarantino movies on there. And just about all of them at this point are revenge movies, but I got not one of them. Zero. QT.
My list is all pretty straightforward revenge. My also-rans are all kind of different takes on revenge. So my also-rans would probably be more of an
more
interesting conversation now that I think about
it. Well, that's good. So let's not talk about those very little at the way end.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just dig into the boring ones right from the start. Dave, your fifth favorite revenge flick of all time.
This one, they got really creative with the title. It is 1990's Revenge, starring Kevin Costner, Madeline Stowe, Anthony Quinn. I don't know if you remember Kevin Costner in the late 80s into the mid 90s. He was a badass. And this was kind of at the start of that. Like Presidio and this are like the two first badass Kevin Costner roles I remember. And it has been a while since I've seen this because I was so young when I saw it. But Madeline Stowe was smoking hot in it. Anthony Quinn was a really good bad guy adversary, I guess. And just Kevin Costner was just badass Kevin Costner. It's a hard one to talk about the plot because it's
Spoiler alerts.
It's a good revenge thriller. Lots of twists and turns. Like it's a thriller. It's not necessarily your... It's not Old Boy, where it's not Kill Bill, where it's your super violent, like I'm going to hunt them down and kill them. It's a little bit more than that, and it's a good thriller while still being a badass movie.
I think there are kind of a couple ways that revenge movies can go. They can go the route of the Old Boy and the Kill Bill, where it is very much violent, and the revenge is not necessarily that well planned out. It's just like, well, I'm going to go find these people, and I'm going to kill them. And then there's that cerebral approach where you're really trying to inflict the mass amount of damage you can on somebody. Your number five was simply named Revenge. I guess my number five would be a synonym for revenge. You may call Revenge Payback from 1999, directed by Brian Helgeland, starring Mel Gibson, Greg Henry, and Maria Bello. There are lots of reasons that you might need to seek revenge, and by you, I mean a fictional movie character. Money, a double cross, love even, or perhaps to avenge a murder. Mel Gibson's Porter has all of these things in Payback. He's chasing after his old partner, who stole his money after double crossing him, and his wife as well, who happened to shoot him in the back a couple times. Lots of variables in play for Porter in this movie. Plenty of twists and turns, maybe even 70,000 twists and turns in the plot, which to the amusement of many criminals in the movie is really all the money that Mel Gibson is after. Kind of. I mean, he's got some other irons in the fire, so to speak. But you talked about Kevin Costner being a badass kind of before Mel Gibson became a complete nutball. He was kind of badass. Maybe we'll talk about another badass Mel Gibson role later. Maybe we won't. I don't know. But he definitely had a string where you didn't want to mess with Mel Gibson. In this movie, you definitely don't want to mess with him. It seemed like as much as he wanted revenge for all the bad things, it was like a matter of principle for him. It's like, you stole $70,000. People are throwing all kinds of money at him. He's like, no, I'm after 70 grand.
Mel Gibson's a good one because I hate that he's such an awful human being because he was so good. He might come up later in this list. If there's an episode in a few weeks that we may record sooner than later, he'll probably show up on that episode too.
Guarantee it.
But Payback's a good one, and that's one I toyed with back and forth, but that was another one of those that, like, eh.
It's kind of obvious, sure, which is why I have it at five.
But I didn't. It was like, oh, Ryan might have it, and if Ryan doesn't, I'm okay not talking about it. But I do like Mel Gibson and the one he did a few years ago, written by the guy that wrote The Departed, Edge of Darkness.
Yeah.
Similar in that, but I think that was more angry Mel Gibson.
Yeah, that was
Payback
a bit darker.
Payback was more like suave.
Yeah, it
Mel
was,
Gibson at his
best. It was fun. It was a good action movie, but it's very fun.
And it's frustrating because I do miss that Mel Gibson. I do. I understand why we don't get him anymore. And yes, he is a terrible human being, but I miss that era Mel Gibson because he was so electric on screen.
Let me say, one of the movies that I left off was Machete. That doesn't make my list, although Mel Gibson is the bad guy in Machete Kills. And he does a pretty fun job of being the caricature version of Mel Gibson. He's very out there, but he still has a little bit of that charm left. I mean, it does suck because you know he's a terrible human being. But a couple of the roles he's done, you like the Beaver.
I love the Beaver.
And in that movie, he's kind of charming again. So it's a long road back for Mel Gibson. But keep doing more movies like Payback and Machete Kills. And the Beaver, sure, whatever. Machete Kills again in space. Check it out in theaters. You're number four, Dave.
My number four, shocker here, I'm going to go across the pond to a nice little British revenge flick from 2009, Harry Brown. Michael Caine is one of the best actors in the world and has been for a long time. He's notorious for showing up in, like, Alfred.
In Batman.
Like, Alfred is a perfect role for him, like that supporting role where he doesn't have a ton of screen time, but he just steals every scene he's in. Harry Brown's one of the rare recent ones where he's the lead. He just plays an ex-Marine that he really has his one friend he plays chess with in the park, and then his wife, who's terminally ill. Then she dies, and then his friend is getting bullied by some gangs, so he's carrying a bayonet with him. He tells him to go to the police. Then next thing you know, the gang beats him to death and leave no evidence other than the bayonet, which Emily Mortimer shows up as the investigator on the case, saying, like, yeah, we can't find anything other than his bayonet, so even if they do find him, those thugs can claim self-defense. So Harry Brown decides he has nothing to lose, and he decides to deliver justice, and it's just awesome. People went nuts when Liam Neeson went badass and Taken, because it's like an old guy going badass. Michael Caine's even older and even more badass, and it was just such a good movie. Yeah, it's a little slow moving. It's not Kill Bill pace.
It's not Taken.
Yeah, it's not Taken. It's more methodical, but it's brutal. I mean, it's violent. It's worth it just for Michael Caine, because you don't see Michael Caine in these kind of roles. Now, even in his younger days, you didn't see this kind of Michael Caine. And it's just really, I think it's a good thing to add to his resume, because it's a different kind of movie, even after such a long career, to throw something like this in there. And it's just a really awesome movie.
My number four, very brutal, very violent. It is from 1972, directed by Wes Craven, Last House on the Left, starring Sandra Peabody, Lucy Grantham, and David Hess. I think if we really wanted to, we could do almost an entire list focused just on women's revenge movies. It's kind of a subgenre, or could be a subgenre, of exploitation movies, and there were a ton of them in the 70s and the 80s. When bad people do bad things, like, I don't know, spoiler alert, kill a couple of innocent girls, you really kind of root for them to get their comeuppance, and few folks can give said comeuppance like Wes Craven and a couple of his pissed off parents. This is a movie where they go out of their way to the antagonists. They make them horrible people to where there is nothing redeeming about them at all. And they do an act which is very despicable and designed to piss you off and make you feel no remorse for them, because the things that are about to happen to them are awful. And you really necessarily wouldn't wish them on your worst enemy, but these people are such scumbags, you kind of feel okay rooting for somebody to get their dick bit off. And some of the other worst things that happened to some of the folks in this movie. Very early in Wes Craven, it's kind of before he was that guy. But if you look in this movie, you can tell that all the seeds are there to have a great horror director. There's lots of suspense, lots of blood, lots of violence. I believe the movie was rated X when it came out, and it's not a real big surprise that it was. But I left off, I Spit on Your Grave. That was kind of another one. That those two seem to be very similar. I Spit on Your Grave is more a woman avenging herself.
It's hard to, for those movies not to just get lumped together. Yeah. Not just because they similar in theme, but because they got
very
remade around the same time also.
And they were originally made at about the same time too. So yeah, those are six of one, half dozen of the other, I suppose. I like Last House on the Left better. It doesn't seem as much of an exploitation film as I Spit in Your Grave. And there's nothing wrong with exploitation films. God knows I've sat through enough of them in my day. But in terms of revenge, I like the fact that this is, you know, kind of the parents getting the revenge for on behalf of their departed kids.
And that's what really sets it apart, too, is that it's not... I mean, a lot of these revenge movies we're talking about are in revenge on getting revenge for somebody else, but just you put parents in that situation. I really like that aspect of that one. My number three, I think.
Yes.
This one, not surprising. It's based on one of my favorite comic books ever. Kind of got a little bit of a bum rap when it came out, but for somebody who loved the comic growing up, I loved 2004's The Punisher. Yeah, it wasn't 100% dead on. I didn't like the Miami setting, but as an action movie, as a revenge movie, I thought it was really well done. The whole scene that basically births the Punisher, with which a family reunion just being slaughtered and destroyed and everybody he loves all taken out in one swoop, really compelling. And then for him to come back, and it wasn't just machine guns and grenades. Like, it was... To see
there
him,
were a few of them.
Yeah, oh, there were a lot of them. But to see the process where he gets inside Travolta's head first, and then it gets violent, and he kind of makes everybody turn on each other, and there was kind of a like a psychological haunting aspect that he took to it, which I really liked. And something that happens in comic book movies overall is it's really hard to have a compelling villain, really. Avengers was the rare case, and Dark Knight, like, those villains are fantastic. I really like Travolta, even though he kind of came out of nowhere. I really like what he did with the role. He understood what his purpose was there, and I thought, because as much as I love the Punisher comics, I was hesitant when I saw that Travolta was cast in the movie, but I thought for what he needed to do, he did it great, and Thomas Jane was perfect. Thomas Jane was the perfect Punisher, and I hate what happened with War Journal, and I love Dirty Laundry, the Punisher short film that Tom Jane made, which if you have not seen that, watch it, because it's just
pretty sweet.
It's 10 minutes of just brutality, but I really liked it, and I because I did grow up reading the Punisher comics. I loved it all the way from fifth grade when I met my best friend Zane. We drew comic books of the Punisher back and forth in class. So something always was with me with the Punisher. And I like that this guy just, he's just out for revenge. And yeah, he gets revenge on his family, but kind of makes it a personal mission to where I'm just going to kill as many bad guys as I can to serve vengeance to everybody else that needs revenge that isn't going after it themselves.
That may be kind of a an extreme example, but I think comic book movies in general, like I was thinking about Batman, like why, you know, he becomes Batman. I guess it's kind of in part revenge because of the killing of his parents. It seems like that's kind of a maybe a trope in some of the superhero movies. It's why they become superheroes, to take revenge on something. And I think that the Punisher is probably the perfect example of it, because he's not really a superhero. He's just a dude that's really pissed.
Yeah.
That's
his superpower. Nothing to lose. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No superheroes in my number three. I left off Old Boy, but there's an entire trilogy of vengeance movies from Chan Wook Park that you could pick from. And I chose the first one from 2002, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. It's right in the title there. It's starring Jae Soon Lee, Yong Lee, and probably some other folks too. As I said, it's the first in the Vengeance trilogy, followed by Old Boy and Lady Vengeance. And I think that, you know, most people probably at this point have a good idea of what Old Boy is, either the original or, you know, at least you might be familiar with the Spike Lee joint that came out last week. But I actually think that Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is a better movie than Old Boy. It doesn't have that completely, you know, take the floor out from under you plot twists. But I think that the bad guys in Old Boy are pretty clear. They're bad people and you don't like them. They're not compelling because they're not sympathetic. But in Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, everyone in the movie is kind of a bad person, but you can kind of see the reasons that they're doing the things that they do. For a Korean movie, it's kind of a Greek tragedy. It's a real downer to watch, but I think it's the most thought-provoking movie in his trilogy. And just every character, you know, being sympathetic. I mean, it's about a deaf mute guy who kidnaps his boss's son. And you think, oh, if the guy's, you know, kidnapping a kid to ransom off, well, that's because he's a bad dude. But then you find out that, no, he's really doing that because he's, you know, got no other. I don't really want to spoil too much of it, but it is a really good movie. And you can kind of understand why the guy kidnaps the kid. You know, no intentions of hurting him. Some accidents happen and a lot of people end up dead. But it's one of the rare examples of a movie that's about revenge where you really don't necessarily want to see the revenge get carried out. You just want everybody to kind of sit down, talk it over, and be like, a bunch of bad things just happened. Let's just stop where we are. Let's not make things worse. But in typical Chan Wook Park fashion, things do get worse. Really, really good movie. I think it's underrated. And, you know, if you're a fan of Old Boy, you should definitely check this one out.
I like all three of those.
They're all three good.
Yeah, but I think the first one is, if I were picking one, I kind of knew you'd have this, so I didn't put any thought into it. I would pick the first one also, but I enjoy all three of those.
It seems like Lady Vengeance is probably a bit more straightforward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like, wrongly convicted of something, so I'm just going to go. And the second one, Old Boy, is we've talked about enough. So, yeah, I'm glad that you let me talk about the first one and agree with me.
My number two, we're going to go back to superheroes, back to comic book adaptations. This is an obvious one that I'm sure Ryan left off because it was obvious, but I can't talk about revenge movies and not talk about 1994's The Crow. Much like The Punisher, where he comes back because his entire family's murdered. Well, they missed him, and that's why The Punisher's born. They actually kill Eric Draven and his fiance, his girlfriend, wife, what I believe it was fiance at the time. They kill him, and he comes back a year later to hunt them all down and kill them. It was an awesome action movie. He was an awesome character, and Brandon Lee did awesome stuff with it. Ernie Hudson's character, the little girl, it was done so well, and then it had that element of horror that, yeah, these guys were terrible that deserved what they were coming, what was coming to them, but you kind of got yourself put in their shoes, and, oh, this guy is back from the dead hunting us down, and it's just, it's such a cool movie. Like, cool is one of the best. It's such a lame term to say, but it's a perfect definition of this movie because it is very cool. It's a cool action movie, cool revenge movie, cool horror-esque movie. It's not going to be confused for a horror anytime soon, but it's got that supernatural element and the hunting and being preyed aspect to it. But there's enough there to give it some heart. Like I said, Ernie Hudson, the kid, even Brandon Lee is so good in this. And it is depressing. It spawned a bunch of terrible, terrible sequels and a terrible, terrible TV show. But the story is so great, and it's such a cool idea. And this was executed damn near flawlessly with one major mistake.
Yeah, I was going to say there was one flaw in the production. But the concept of the character itself, I mean, you see however many, like, goth kids dressed as the Crow for Halloween, because it's a relatively easy look to pull off. But it is so iconic. Even people that haven't even seen the movie would probably know, you see the face paint, you know what they're going for there. It is a shame that we didn't get, and I'm sure you've mentioned it before, we've talked about The Crow probably a handful of times, but it is a shame that we didn't get more from Brandon Lee. It's a dude that absolutely could have been an incredible action star. He had the charisma of his dad, but I think it was even in a different way, like, he was a very good performer as well.
He was miles ahead of his dad from a movie star standpoint.
Yes.
I don't want to see Bruce Lee in a movie not kicking anybody. Brandon Lee could pull that off. Brandon Lee could pull off the, oh, I don't need the heavy act. Not take anything away from Bruce Lee.
Right.
He's Bruce Lee. But I think Brandon Lee was more for this time. And I think he could have been a pretty awesome movie star.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way that Bruce Lee can pull off the role of the Crow. But yeah, I think there was a very high ceiling for what Brandon Lee could have done. And, you know, leaving this movie behind, it is really good. And it's, I left it off because I know how much you like it. I would have been shocked, you know, if you'd left it off. Sometimes we do leave off things that are obvious, but I think, you know, when it comes to something that you like so much, it's not worth trying to leave it off your list. My number two, I tried to kind of dabble a little bit. I had the horror element. I had a movie that was a bit more fun, like with Payback. This one's a Western. There are quite a few Westerns that I think, you know, you could kind of lump in this revenge category. You've got your pick, really. I took one from 1976, directed and starring Clint Eastwood, the outlaw Josie Wales, also Sandra Locke, and Chief Dan George. I think this is kind of an interesting revenge story here. Josie Wales is all sorts of pissed off at some renegade Union soldiers at the end of the Civil War. They, much like Frank Castle, they kill his wife, they kill his child, and they also double-cross some of his rebel friends, convince them to surrender, and then they can all get gunned down. But they missed a couple. They missed the outlaw Josie Wales. And immediately, he sets himself on to taking revenge, and he does kill quite a few of these soldiers. So he does get kind of a measure of revenge, and then he kind of just stops. So end of the movie, right? Well, no, that's really about 40% of the way through. He's just decided that his quest for revenge is over, and he's just trying to live kind of like a regular life at this point with a couple Indian friends that he's met. But this is kind of like a two-course revenge meal because his past kind of catches up with him, and then he's forced to not necessarily reignite his quest for revenge, but kind of see it through just so that, you know, his new Indian friends don't befall the same fate of his wife and child. And I think it has one of the iconic endings in Western history. I mean, there's a couple that I think everybody can, whether you've seen the movies or not, I'm sure people know how The Good, the Bad, the Ugly ends and things like that. But I thought the ending for Outlaw Josie Wales was really good too. And it doesn't really spell things out for you, but you know, it just kind of leaves it up to you. Your interpretation of it is good enough for Eastwood in this particular instance.
Yeah, I didn't even dig into Westerns because Westerns open up a whole most. I'm off the top of my head, most of them are revenge driven.
Yeah, I mean True Grit.
Yeah,
that's
so it's like I didn't even dig into that, but I didn't mention it on revenge. That felt like a Western, like even though it was modern times in 90, it was almost like Tony Scott wanted to direct a Western without the cowboy hats and stuff. And that's what revenge felt like.
So I think a lot of movies are Westerns without the cowboy hats. You know, Star Wars is kind of a Western without the cowboy hats. I just recently watched The Wolverine, which is very much a Western without the cowboy hats. But I kind of wanted to get a sampling from, you know, several different genres, and Westerns are so rich with stories about revenge that it would have been very easy to pick. Unforgiven. Take your pick. I picked Josie Wales just because it was kind of that stop and start feel where it wasn't just an arc from beginning to end about getting revenge for, you know, misdeed A, B, and C. It just, you know, it kind of stopped. There was some movie and then it started back up again. And that doesn't happen in any of my other movies. So what the hell?
Yeah, my number one, we're going back across the pond. It's a movie I know I've mentioned before, but again, I can't talk about revenge movies and not talk about from 2004, Dead Man's Shoes. Directed by Shane Meadows, who I wish would do more movies. He found some success and has been doing mini series of This Is England. But just between Dead Man's Shoes and This Is England, two fantastic movies that have a brutality, like a young British Scorsese almost, where they're just angry, violent, brutal films. And Dead Man's Shoes is so good. It's Paddy Considine, who mostly known for comedies, I think, but
mostly known for appearing on your lists.
Yeah, he does show up on my list quite a bit. But Paddy Considine doing amazing performance. He comes back from, you know, from service to find his mentally challenged brother has been being bullied. So he wants to go after him. And it's, I mentioned a couple of them having a horror element to it. And this one more so than the others, because unlike a lot of them, you spend time with the guys who did the tormenting, who are being hunted down. So you get to know them as characters. And you see them essentially being stalked. And, you know, Paddy Considine is doing a lot of psychological stuff, like I mentioned with Punisher, but even more so, he's trying to screw up their world and get them scared of everything. And he does a good job of it, and then dons the gas mask and hunts them down and kills them. And
spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's really cool to see how everything plays out. There's a nice little twist in there that kind of makes you think twice about everything. But just between Considine's performance and Meadows' direction and script, it's pretty much a perfect revenge flick, because it does, there is sympathy there for the guys that, yeah, they're not great people, but do they deserve
what they're going to get?
What they're getting. And it's, they were jerks, but it was bullying. And how far does bullying need to go before it warrants what they're getting? And it's very, very cool, because it does take on kind of both angles. You understand why Paddy Considine is going through what he's going through. Like, he loves his brother, but yet you see what it's causing to these other people that just jokes that they didn't think twice about are now putting him in this position. And it's just a really, really fantastic movie.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of going back to, you know, what we talked about with having sympathetic villains in the movie, where you kind of do feel bad for them. I think it makes for a more interesting story. It's not quite so cut and dry. Like Last House on the Left, very cut and dry. These are bad people. So you don't feel bad when they get hunted down and massacred. But when a revenge film is done with a bit more of a deft touch, you do kind of feel bad for the guys that are getting their comeuppance. To use that word again, I'll probably never say it again on the podcast. But
it's hard to say, talk about revenge movies without comeuppance.
Exactly. So now you're on the board with one too. My number one is, I feel like it's an obvious choice, and I don't usually like to do that, especially for number one, but how can you not be entertained by The Gladiator from 2000, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Russell Crowe, Joaquin Phoenix, Connie Nielsen? Like The Punisher, you know, you've got a guy who everything's been taken from him. He's got really no reason to be alive, so why not just try and kill as many people as you possibly can? Not really too different from Maximus in The Gladiator. You've got a man whose only reason for living is to be able to look the man responsible for ruining his life in the eyes. That's all he wants to do. That's it. But in order to do that, he's got to kill a bunch of people. He's pretty much the living embodiment of revenge, like The Punisher, and I guess like the living dead embodiment in The Crow. It's kind of a tall order, at least for Maximus, to kind of balance the scales, because he's trying to kill the emperor as opposed to, you know, a drug kingpin or just some thugs, you know, whatever. But watching him try is pretty rad. It's one of those weird movies that won Best Picture but did not win Best Director. I think it's kind of a slight on Ridley Scott. He's directed some awesome movies.
But wasn't that year, wasn't Soderbergh nominated two or three? Didn't he have two or three movies nominated for Best Picture? So they gave Soderbergh a Best Director?
2000 was really, really weird. Russell Crowe won. I guess I got nothing against Russell Crowe necessarily.
He won that one for the year before with The Contender.
Right. But I think maybe Ridley Scott could use some revenge on the Academy, and you know, maybe he'll get it. I hope. This is a really good movie. One of the reasons that maybe we don't talk about it as much is it is kind of a popular movie that a lot of people, and maybe even people that don't necessarily like movies, are into this because it's pretty iconic. It's a fun movie, but it's a really good revenge movie.
I honestly have never seen it.
Really?
That's one of those that I've never seen. There's no reason why. I just haven't.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I won't disagree with
you.
You
heard of it?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Are you familiar with Russell Crowe?
I should have looked it up while I was talking. I think Aaron Brockovich and Traffic were both nominated for Best Picture in 2000, so they gave Soderbergh director for
Traffic.
Traffic.
Yeah.
Because Julia Roberts got it for Brockovich. So, yeah. Now, my interest, you don't have any also-rans?
I don't come up with movies specifically to put them as also-rans. I might have one that just doesn't make the list because I just don't like it as much as my number five. Or most of the time, it's just because they're obvious. Like Kill Bill, I think, probably should belong on this list. I mean, Django very well could. Death Proof could. Any of Tarantino's movies could fit on there. But
I generally just come up with a list of movies that would fit the list and then take my top five out of there. And that's why I usually have so many also-rans. But I didn't realize until looking at it that all my top five are your more traditional revenge movies, where the ones that I kind of thought outside the box of, maybe that's why they didn't make my top five, but I had Memento.
Yeah.
It's not your traditional revenge flick, but that's 100% what drives the main character, is John G. raped and killed my wife.
Right.
So that's 100% revenge driven. Cape Fear, both the Max Schreck and the De Niro one, it's a little different take because it's the villain that's getting revenge, and it doesn't necessarily go that well for him, but I thought that one popped into my head. Sleepers, which is not necessarily, it's more the history leading up to why they want revenge.
Right.
It's one of those, like, they've never sought revenge, but here they have an opportunity to get revenge, so might as well take it. A Time to Kill, Sammy Jackson gets revenge for what happened to his daughter. And it's more the aftermath of that. It follows the trial of Sammy Jackson, which I thought was cool because, yeah, it's the revenge is gotten early, but it's more the aftermath of revenge. And then this one's kind of out of left field, In the Bedroom. I believe it was 2000, 2001. Really dark, heavy movie. And it's not really revenge-driven, but it's just about a family dealing with a loss. And you don't really get that closure until the end when they do seek out revenge randomly. And it's a weird one because I wouldn't consider it a revenge movie because that's not what drives the story, but that's ultimately what wraps up the story. So I think it deserves a mention. But that movie it's dark.
And I haven't seen it yet, but we talked about Old Boy right at the top and Out of the Furnace. But, you know, Prisoners is kind of in theaters, which does seem very much in the genre of a revenge film.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's that outside of the box, but haven't seen it yet. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I've seen it watching the trailer, but maybe eventually I'll see
it. A couple other ones that came out, I think it hurt them that they came out around the same time, was The Death Sentence with Kevin Bacon. It was the Death Wish remake directed by James Wan. James Wan directed that. It wasn't terrible.
No, but I'm glad you bring that up because that is one, Death Wish with Charles Bronson.
Death Wish is going to make number one on like most lists.
Yeah, but yeah, and I feel like we should at least mention it so we're kind of doing justice. Like, yeah, we know,
yeah,
but we like to be contrarian.
Death Sentence and The Brave One starring Jodie Foster came out like, I believe within a month or a few weeks of each other, so they kind of got lumped together. Neither of them are terrible. They're both well done for what they were, and they were nice little revenge movies, but I they weren't my top five worthy.
They weren't as good as Payback.
Or Dead Man's Shoes.
that's actually going to do it, not only for our revenge episode, but for this week. It's the holidays. We know you're busy. Spoiler alert, we're busy too. So at least for the month of, for the most part, for the month of December, we're going to do just one episode a week. We will sprinkle in towards the end of the month. I think we've got a week that'll have two. So that'll be like a Christmas bonus for you. You'll have a couple episodes, but just one for this week, and it was revenge. We will be back for some revenge next week with
favorite female-driven action movies. Wonder Woman was cast today in the Batman Superman Wonder League movie. I don't know. some girl from Fast the Furious was cast as Wonder Woman. So we're going to bounce off of that and just do our favorite female-led action movies. Maybe The Brave One will make the list. I doubt it. But
maybe Kill Bill will make the list.
Could.
I doubt
it. That could also be. But probably not, because we just mentioned it. But that's next week. We got some fun. We'll get Christmassy the week after that, maybe.
Closer to Christmassy.
Yeah, we don't do Christmas like we do Halloween, where it's just Halloween for a month. But if you want more of me, you can find me at Dave Bacella on Twitter. You can hear more of me if you want. Last week, we put out the Thanksgiving episode of Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. You can find that at ericanddave.com. That's Eric with a K. Also, this week, I was a guest on a podcast that I produce called Facts. You can listen to that at factspodcast.com. And I also was a guest on a show called The Laugh Trek Show, which you can find at laughtrek.com. That's LAFFTrek.com.
Or if you want to hear more of Dave, just stop on by next week for our favorite women
action movie,
our girl power episode. What the hell? Let's just call it what it is. But until then,
keep it up.